Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tottenham.
Tottenham.
Don't be a Tottenham.
You want goals?
Tottenham's got the...
Tottenham. I'm saying Tottenham very, very often.
Hot shot. Give them all you got.
Let me make it plain. Tottenham are the kings. The kings of White Hart Lane.
Top 10 Tottenham.
Hello, welcome to another edition of Top 10 Tottenham. Thank you so much for joining me again. Delighted to be joined by this gentleman, a man who's been going to Spurs, well, over 70 years. He's been on the Spurs show quite a few times. The journalist and author, Norman Giller, returns. How are you, Norman?
I'm fine, and I'm wishing good luck to everybody who's waiting to hear my new manager. When is this going out?
Probably in a few weeks. Been saying that, we'll probably, but knowing Tottenham, still be no manager. So as we record this, we certainly don't have a new coach. So you're more than welcome to mention that. You know, it could be you, Norman. Maybe, I mean, you've got the experience.
I could do a better job than some of those mentioned.
I think you, Norman, have Ledley King with you, Ryan Mason, maybe a couple of other ex-Spurs players. I think you kind of know... I mean, how many games of football do you think you've actually seen in your life?
In my life, for in my Daily Express days, I was reporting over 100 matches a season.
Well, there you are.
Many of them would have been Tottenham because I always try to get the Tottenham matches. But I was punch drunk by the 1970s. And that's when I decided to find a sane way of making a living.
Yeah.
I went into television.
And TV. Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. It's a very sane business, that one as well, I suppose. What I loved about your top 10 picks is they kind of reflect the whole era of you following Tottenham, which is really, really nice. For younger listeners, there's going to be clips here that you might have heard, you might have listened to, you might not have. Some of them, unfortunately, I couldn't find clips for. God knows I tried. I found a bit of Pate News stuff, but some of it didn't have any audio, which was a bit annoying. But your first moment, and this is mentioning a man that I know, my dear departed Uncle Simon. This was his hero as a kid. I know my father certainly saw this... player. Many people of a certain age are probably say Jennings was probably the greatest keeper they saw at Tottenham, but this man certainly comes in number two for many, many people. And I'm talking about Ted Ditchburn. And this probably was the moment it was a Ted Ditchburn save against Charlton Athletic in the 1950-51 season. And this was this moment when you sort of were hooked. This was the moment that got you as a Spurs fan, Norman.
Well, it was at the Valley, which was the Charlton Athletic Ground, which in those days regularly had 60,000 fans. And I'd been taken to the Valley by my Charlton Athletic fanatical uncle, Uncle Roy, and he did not know that my godfather, another uncle, had already nobbled me and had told me all about this push-and-run Tottenham team that was the talk of football. Tottenham had just come up from the second division as champions, and here they were leading the first division. And I was supposed to be supporting Charlton Athletic, and I was at the Charlton Athletic end. And Charlie Vaughan, who was a Charlton Athletic striker, or centre forward, they were called in those days, he shot from just outside the box. And I was squashed up against the fence. And I had Ted Ditchburn's view of it. And I was cheering along with everybody else what seemed a certain picture goal, when suddenly Superman, is it a bird, is it a plane? No, it's Ted Ditchburn. He threw himself across the goal, and most goalkeepers would have punched it away, but Ted actually caught the ball in midair. And from that moment on, to this 10-year-old boy, Ted Ditchburn was God, and Tottenham Hotspur were my team.
Where were you brought up, Norman? Where were you brought up?
I'm an East End boy, a cable seat boy from Stepney. Right. Very yeah. posh.
So you were in a kind of big Tottenham area as well. I mean, obviously, you know.
My area was split three ways: West Ham United, Millwall, and Tottenham Hotspur. Yeah. And but Tottenham was the farthest ground for me, so I didn't watch them regularly until I became a journalist a few years later.
Mm. What a lot of people say about Ditchburn and the footage I've seen, he was a very kind of elastic keeper, incredibly athletic, wasn't he, Ditchburn?
Well, we're talking of a man from another planet, and it wasn't Krypton. He was a cruiserweight boxer,
right?
And he would have boxed professionally if it hadn't been for football. And this is how he played his game. Goalkeepers had to be very aggressive then, because shoulder charging was allowed. Many of your listeners must have memories of the 1958 FA Cup final, for instance, when Nat Lofthouse barged Harry Gregg over the line and was awarded a goal. Well, nowadays, he'd have been put in the tower. I mean,
you can't touch a keeper now, can you?
But goalkeepers have become a protected species. But Ted played in an era when you had to defend yourself. Almost like a box on the ropes playing rope-a-dope. I mean, he was hammered at every corner. But Ted was big enough and strong enough to be the king of the penalty area. And I would put him at number three in all the Tottenham goalkeepers that I've seen over the last 70 years. Number one, of course, would be Patrick. Pat Jennings, absolute master. The most modest man I've ever met. And I was with Pat fairly recently, and he was trying to convince me that Hugo Lloris was a better goalkeeper than he was.
Really?
But I refused to concede, and I left him in the mood to realise that all Spurs fans will always say Pat Jennings number one.
Absolutely.
Hugo number two. Ray Clements, three, brackets, Ted Ditchburn, four.
Yeah, I think that's right. This was an era in the sort of early 50s when certainly a lot of players who lived locally to the ground they played in every other week would take the bus there. I hear stories of, you know, Len Dukin would be getting on the bus with his boots.
Well, just let me paint a picture of the time. I mean, remember, this is fairly soon after the war. London was still blitzed and there were bomb ruins everywhere. And the players used to go to the ground in their demob suits, which is what most of the supporters were wearing, the suits they were given at the end of their military service. And everybody went there either by train or bus. And very few players had motor cars. It was another world. And
they weren't earning much at this time as well. This is when unions were in football.
Well, in 1950, when I first started watching, they were earning £17 a week. They'd just gone up from £11 a week, which was a massive rise. And they were already earning, you know, twice as much as the average man. So, okay. So £17 a week was considered a good wage, although now it won't buy you a meal on the way to the ground, will it?
Yeah. No, it certainly won't. Your second memory, obviously we have a clip for, I think any Spurs fan would have seen this. It's obviously the double year, the 1960-61. Here is Bobby Smith's goal against Leicester City in the FA Cup. Let's listen to it now.
Suddenly, Bobby Smith seized his chance. Goal! For Spurs, that goal was just what the doctor ordered.
What's your memory of that? I mean, obviously, he was famously, he shouldn't have played that game, should he, Smith? He was injured.
Well, Bobby became a very close friend of mine in his later life. And we were getting ready to write his autobiography. And sadly, he passed on. And he took the secrets of his career to the grave with him. But something that he had told me privately is that on the morning of the final against Leicester City, when Spurs were looking to clinch the double, he was so desperate to play. And this is when the FA Cup was just as important as the League Championship. He went privately to his local doctor in Palmer's Green, which is down the road from Wembley, and had an injection in his knee, because he knew that if Bill Nicholson knew the pain that he was in, he wouldn't have played him. He was so desperate to play that he went and had this injection and then became the man of the match. He scored the first goal that we've just seen, and then later on he crossed the ball to Terry Dyson from the wing, and Terry Dyson was in the middle, as if they're swapped positions, and Terry Dyson scored the winner. But funny enough, while that was a moment that stopped the world for Spurs fans, for Bill Nicholson, it was a terrible anticlimax, because all season Spurs have played magical football from another world. And Bill was so disappointed that in the final, Spurs just didn't get into their rhythm. But a player called Lynn Chalmers, Leicester City, he got injured. And they were playing 10 and a half men with Len limping on the wing. And it somehow upset the rhythm of Spurs. And the match just didn't live up to expectations. And Bill Nicholson never got over that.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's obviously more stories about Bobby in your wonderful new book, My 70 Years of Spurs, A Long Walk Down White Hart Lane. I know for listeners, we'll be doing a separate show focusing on the book. But for now, go and get that. It's by Pitch Publishing. Wonderful memories, wonderful stories about Bobby Smith, particularly in there. Your third clip, a man obviously you were very, very close to, became still best mates with. I'm talking, of course, still the greatest goal scorer the club has ever seen, Jimmy Greaves. This was the following season. We just missed out on the league, but we still won the cup against Burnley, and we scored nice and early. And let's remind ourselves of that goal now.
What a dramatic start. The game is only 3 minutes old when, from the head of Bobby Smith, the ball is at the magic feet of Jimmy Greaves. He half loses control, regains it, and flashes it into the net.
Obviously a wonderful goal. Greaves, probably the only kind of player that could come into that double-winning team. We were very, very lucky to have Jimmy on the show a few years back before he got ill. He talked about that game and his debut against Blackpool. When did you become really friendly with him? Was it sort of during his playing career?
I was on the Stratford Express as assistant sports editor, and there were two of us on the sports staff. And Jimmy was born in East Ham, which was that made him a local boy, although by then he was living in Hainault, just outside Dagenham. And Jimmy was making a breakthrough at Chelsea as a 17-year-old wonder kid. And I went to interview him at Stamford Bridge when he was 17. So we've known each other since 1957.
Wow, amazing.
And what I have to say, and this will hurt all Spurs fans, but he played the best football of his life in a Chelsea shirt when he had the innocence of youth, didn't think about the game at all, and just did everything naturally. And he was probably the most gifted footballer to emerge on the English, on the playing fields of England, certainly in my lifetime. And some of the goals he used to score for Chelsea, which just unbelievable. And he then went off to Milan. And the reason for going to Milan was purely financial. And while he was on his way to Milan, the PFA finally conceded that players would only play if they got kicked out the maximum wage. And from the moment that Jimmy arrived in Milan, he suddenly found out that they were earning just as much money back in England, and he was in the prison of Italian football.
He tried to get the contract cancelled, didn't he, apparently?
He did. I mean, from the moment he got there, he didn't want to be there. He was homesick. He hated the football because they were playing a system called Catenaccio, which in Italian means bolt, and they played a bolt defence. And this was introduced by an Argentinian coach called Herrera. And all the Italian clubs were copying it, and every striker had at least two or three defenders on him. And Jimmy had no freedom at all. He played 14 games out there and scored 9 goals.
I mean, that's extraordinary, isn't it?
And that was with three players defending.
That's what's so amazing, isn't it? That he still managed to bang in 9 in 14. It's incredible.
But Chelsea offered him, tried to double his money to get him back to Chelsea. But he had played against the double team the previous season and seen just how exceptional they were. And he held out to play at Spurs, even though at £65 a week he was getting much less than he'd been offered at Chelsea, because he wanted to play for Tottenham, which had been the team that he'd watched and supported as a kid.
Isn't it amazing? There's a real... We've done a few of these now, and we hear various stories. We've had many, many ex-players coming on the show over the years. Pretty much all of them talk about being offered to play for Spurs, other team, and always offered less by Tottenham. This goes for the last 60 years. You know, I was offered... I mean, we had Dean Austin, and he was offered more at Crystal Palace than at Tottenham. I mean, it's extraordinary how Tottenham over the years...
Bill Nicholson was the greatest manager in the history of Tottenham, possibly in the history of the game. But he used Spurs money as though it was their money, and not his. And he was quite miserly, Bill.
Yeah.
he ran a good ship, though, and the players admired him so much, they were happy to take less.
Yeah. Your next clip is... I would discuss it, I think, to many, many people before that night in Amsterdam. Many, many people said this was the greatest game, certainly, at White Hart Lane. I'm talking about the 61-62 semi-final against Benfica. Let's remind ourselves of that game now.
Spurs attack on the right. They have to score 3 goals now to draw level on aggregate. Reeves tries to reach the ball, but Pereira saves. A pass from Bobby Smith finds Greaves. It's in. What tragedy for Spurs. The goal disallowed. Offside. But they're fighters, these Spurs, every one of them. Surely sustained attack must bring a goal. And after 23 minutes, reward comes. White gives a perfect pass to Smith. Goal. Back comes Benfica, and somehow Spurs' goal survives. At half-time, each side has scored 1 goal. Spurs now have only 45 minutes to draw level on aggregate. But they come out fighting, and this is their own ground with their own crowd. They're still full of hope. Coluna fouled John White. A penalty. The kick's taken by Blanche Flower. Goal! So Spurs are really back in the game. Another goal and they level. A free kick. White takes it. Escape for Spurs. Benfica have the ball in the net. This time it's their turn to have it disallowed. From now on, Spurs can do everything but score. For Benfica, it's sheer nightmare. In the closing minutes, Henry puts the ball in the centre. Mackay heads. It hits the crossbar. The Spurs have lost.
This is talked about, as I said before the clip, certainly before that night in Amsterdam. Many, especially my father, you know, he's in his 80s now as well. He always said this was the greatest game he had seen at White Hart Lane. Would you agree with that?
Can I say it transcended football? I mean, it was an occasion. And the atmosphere, I mean, even now I feel the hairs in the back of my neck going up, just thinking back of that night, because it was a cauldron of noise. And there were, I would say, 65,000, I think, the attendance that night, or 62 it might have been. And they sounded like 500,000. I mean, it was just unbelievable, earth-shattering noise. And they were trying their best to lift Tottenham after the defeat in the first leg. And they scored a superb goal through Jimmy Greaves. And while we were all up in the air, missing the days before VAR, we were all up in the air. But it took just as long as back in the days of VAR to realise it had been turned down. From being ecstatic, we were suddenly mourning what would have been a special goal. And to this day, Jimmy will tell you that was should never have been flagged offside. And there was great suspicion about the referee.
Well, I'm sure he's... I'm guessing that maybe the referee might have... I don't know if he's still with us.
I think Jimmy said on your show once, he left to dig himself out to sue.
Yeah. Exactly. And I mean, obviously, even after that, when we needed that one more goal, remember, we rattled the bar. We did everything but score that night. And I mean, Bill Nick said, didn't he, famously, that he really thought we would then go on to beat Real Madrid, who were the greatest team in Europe, arguably, at the time.
The Spurs would have beaten the Jock Steen's Celtic by 5 years to becoming the first British team to win a European Cup. And it hurt Bill for the rest of his life that they failed to make it to the final. Let's remember and give credit to the fact that that was a magnificent Benfica team with Eusebio. And they played wonderful football. But on that night, Spurs were definitely superior, but they were cheated out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then your fifth clip, I mean, you carried on, you mentioned there, so nearly the first team to win the European, British team to win the European Cup. The following season, we then became the first, this will never be taken away from us, the first British team to win a major European trophy. It's always known, and bless him, he's still around and been on the show, it's always known as Dyson's game, Dyson's final. Let's remind ourselves of that extraordinary fifth goal in Rotterdam.
Watch Jimmy Greaves shake the post from this Dyson corner. A minute later, and it's Greaves again to give Spurs that all-important lead. That was the goal, that was. It certainly inspired the Spurs to even greater efforts. White notches goal number two. Madrid's half-time pep talk brought an early reward. Fullback Henry punches out a certain winner, but Collar scored from the resulting penalty. It certainly put new life into Madrid. For 20 minutes, they bombarded the Spurs' defence. But Spurs held out, and in the 67th minute, Dyson put them further ahead. Spurs were playing like the real champions they most certainly are. Greaves made it 4-1. Finally, Dyson made it 5-1. What a game! Danny received the cup that cheers not only him and Spurs supporters, but every English soccer fan.
Were you out there, 63, who were you writing for at this stage?
I was with the Daily Herald.
The Herald.
And in those days, I used to go to matches as what's called the quotes man. So I would be the man hanging around outside the dressing room to get quotes while there's a reporter you probably remember called Peter Lorenzo.
Yes.
He reported the match. And Peter and I later became business partners. But at the time, we were colleagues on the Daily Herald, which most of your listeners would never have heard of. But that morphed into the Broadsheet Sun that then became Murdoch's tabloid Sun.
Right.
And but it was originally called the Daily Herald, and it was a trade union paper.
And the access to players then, you've already said you grew up in an area where many of them grew up as well, was kind of, journalists now just wouldn't believe the access that you would get with players and managers in this particular decade.
But I've got old contacts books, and they go, for instance, Bill Nicholson, his telephone number was Tottenham 1745. And you dial TOT 17445. And that's how long my contacts would go back. And I used to have the number for every major player, every manager. And in those days, they'd answer the phone and talk to you. Nowadays, you have to go either through an agent, or you have to sit at what they call presses now, the press conferences they have, and you're getting exactly the same quotes as everybody else. There's no individual flair in it in the articles anymore, because everybody's listening to the same thing.
We had Julie Welsh on the show a few weeks ago. She also She also picked this moment in Rotterdam. She said that one of the reasons she picked this game is that was when this side peaked and was never the same again. Would you agree with that assertion?
Without question. And it was because of events that followed it. And sadly, the following year, we lost Dave Mackay to a broken leg. Danny Blanchard's knee finally gave in. I mean, he'd been on a wonky knee for nearly as long as Ledley King was on a wonky knee. People forget that. And, of course, darling John White, we lost him on the golf course. And this was all in over a period of about a year. And that was when the team broke up and Bill started looking for his second beautiful lady. I mean, he considered the double team a work of art, and he was trying to find her twin sister. But unfortunately, never quite succeeded. He did build some excellent teams afterwards, but the double team was the one that set all the standards, and the one to which I still bow the knee. Brown, Baker, Henry, Blanchard, Norman Mackay, Dyson, White, Bobby Smith, Clive Allen, and then Cliffy Jones, who could play on either wing.
Yeah, Les Allen, you mentioned his son there, but Les and Clive, one can get mixed up.
Sorry.
That's quite all right.
There's Leslie. And Leslie was the only player to play in both of Jimmy Greaves' major debuts. He was alongside Jimmy when he made his debut at Chelsea, and he was alongside Jimmy when he made his debut for Tottenham against Blackpool in 1961. And each time, Jimmy eventually took his place.
Yeah.
So it was great for Clive Allen to get family revenge for what Jimmy Greaves did to his dad.
Yeah. Let's do a very quick break. And when we come back, we're going to look at your final five of top 10 Tottenham. In the last clip, we had Terry Dyson. You were talking about that team eventually breaking up and Bill Nick trying to find a new one. And that's why it's so nice that your sixth choice is, and in many, many people's choice as well, that night in Molineux, another European trophy, bizarrely won in the Black Country. Martin Chivers, his two wonderful goals. Let's remind ourselves of those moments now.
Chivers. Chivers again. Gilzean spreading out at square. What a shot! Kick that one out. And Chivers again.
Why did you put this one in your top 10 moments?
Number two, I was jumping out of my seat at Molyneux. So you remember that, because Stan Cullis used to sit just in front of us. It's a very brave thing to do, to stand, to jump up when the opposition has scored a goal. But the incredible thing about that was that Big Martin, who was a moody and magnificent, and he and Eddie Bailey just never, ever got on. And they had a row in the dressing room before the match because Bill and Eddie kept nagging Martin about what they wanted to do. And he got so fed up with it, he went and walked out into the middle of the pitch to get away from them. And when he scored his first goal, he looked across at Eddie Bailey and gave him the Churchill reverse sign. Then he scored a fantastic second goal to virtually clinch the tie. And as afterwards, when we were in the dressing room, Eddie Bailey's come in very contrite, and Eddie was out of the Alf Garnett school. He was a very, what can I say, an aggressive Cockney.
Yeah. Colourful language.
Yeah. Well, he couldn't complete a sentence without dropping the F-bomb.
Yeah.
But I loved him. And what a football, by the way. Without Eddie Bailey, there'd have been no push and run side. Anyway, Eddie's gone up to Big Martin and mimed to kiss his feet and said, OK, Martin, you win. Take me home.
Yeah.
And they won the trophy that night, even though it was the second leg to come, because Martin's two goals broke Wolves' hearts.
Yeah. Absolutely. Your next moment here, and this one I couldn't find footage of, so you'll have to paint that picture for us. Your seventh choice was Alan Mulloway's solo lap of honour at White Hart Lane. What was that?
Well, Martin Chivers had virtually won the match, so we thought that Molyneux, but Wolves played out of their skin that night at White Hart Lane. And Alan Mulloway had been brought back from Fulham, where he'd been on loan, and they came back to captain the team in that second leg, and it was Mullers who somehow managed to score the all-important goal that finally ended the comeback from Wolves. And when the final whistle went, there was a crowd invasion, and the pitch was absolutely smothered with spectators. All the Tottenham's players got off into the dressing room, except an Alan, who insisted on doing his lap of honour. Alan had been battered black and blue, and he got back to the dressing room 10 minutes after the rest of Spurs players. Also missing from the dressing room was Bill Nicholson, because he had gone into the Wolves dressing room to commiserate with their players and tell them how wonderful they'd been. And this really upset Tottenham, because they thought he should have been with them, telling them how wonderful they'd been. But that was typical Bill Nicholson, a great sportsman and an honest man. And he knew on that night, Wolves had honestly been the better team. But thanks to the Alan Mulloway goal, which is why I've remembered it as the moment for me of that era, and Spurs had won yet another European trophy.
It was also the goal was a very kind of textbook. Martin Peters loved a quick free kick. Normally it was Chiv that would make that run in there. But it was actually Mulloway, really brave diving header, wasn't it? Surrounded by various Wolves boots, football boots, got that goal that gave us that cushion. And although they got the goal back, we were really hanging on, but managed to hold on to win the trophy. Your next choice, again, is not particularly goal. It's a moment in time. You've obviously talked beautifully about Jimmy Greaves. Your eighth moment memory was the news that Jimmy Greaves was being sold on transfer deadline day in 1969, which at the time was such a huge story. Most Spurs fans wouldn't know about Jimmy's personal problems, I'd imagine. Wouldn't be public like they would be now in the tabloids. That was quite a moment for, I mean, as we record this show, Harry Kane is still with us, but it's the same kind of Willy Wernicke. This was really out of the blue for most Spurs fans, wasn't it?
I was on the Daily Express at the time as a chief football reporter, and I was in the office, and this was on transfer deadline day, and I'd been tipped off that Martin Peters was going to Tottenham from West Ham. Oh, what a good buy that is. And then the story broke that in return, Jimmy Greaves was the make-weight who was going to Upton Park. I just couldn't believe it. I said, what do you mean? This is... I was telephoned by a... I won't say his name, but it was a Spurs official who used to tip me off. So what do you mean Jimmy's going to Whitehall Lane? He said, yeah, he said, there's going to be murders. Bill has given in to Ron Greenwood, who will not let Martin come here unless he gets Jimmy to appease his supporters.
What was, I mean, obviously you were very close to Bill Nicholson as well. What was his thought? Why did he think that we'd seen the best of Jimmy Greaves, who then went on, wasn't at West Ham very long, but still scored goals there as well. What was the thought behind it?
I was very close to Jimmy Greaves in those days. And Jimmy, to be honest, had lost his appetite for football.
Right.
He had become a businessman off the pitch. He and his brother-in-law, Tom, had started a sports shop business, travel business, and it was really mushrooming. I mean, it had a turnover of £1 million, which is a fortune in those days. And Bill Nicholson realised that he'd lost his appetite. They played a match at Crystal Palace in the FA Cup.
Yeah.
And Jimmy, to be honest, was there physically but not mentally. And Bill dropped him after the defeat. And Jimmy then was training for the World Cup rally, which was going to be in the close season, which was from London to Mexico in a Ford Escort. And Jimmy was giving more attention to his rally driving than to football. Bill Nicholson, if he'd had his way, would have kept Jim, but Ron Greenwood was the man who insisted that the only way he could keep his supporters happy was if he got Jimmy in return. So reluctantly, Bill Nicholson let Jimmy go. But it wasn't the Jimmy Greaves that we all remember, peak form Jimmy. This was Jimmy Greaves, very low on confidence and very low on interest in football because he was making money outside the game.
When we had Jimmy on the show a few years ago, I mean, it was incredible. I mean, how many years on we were talking? This is 1969, 70. We had him on, oh, God, I can't remember when it was now. It's 2000 and something. He spoke about this moment almost like it was still yesterday. You could see he was still bitter about it, upset about it. The thing that he said that made it most upsetting was Tottenham were training at the time and his boots were literally left outside in a bag. After all those years, he didn't say goodbye to any of his players. There was no one there to say goodbye to him. And he thought it was handled really badly by the club. Would you agree with that?
Yes, from a PR point of view, it was a total disaster. But let's not forget that Jimmy Greaves made his debut for West Ham at Main Road against Manchester City, scored 2 goals. And after that match, he travelled back by train wearing his West Ham shirt. So let's remember that at the time, Jimmy was very happy to be a West Ham player for very briefly. But yes. What he'll never forgive Spurs for is the way that was handled. He had no say in the matter. I mean, it wasn't like these days they'd have an agent negotiating for months on end, as is happening with Harry Kane at the moment. You know, it's all out of the player's hands. But Jimmy was just phoned at home, brutally told by Bill Nicholson, "I've got Martin Peters in the office, Jim. I've agreed for you to go to West Ham and Ron Greenwood's waiting for you." And at the time, Jimmy was moving from Upminster to a beautiful house in Shenfield. And he discussed it with his wife, Irene. And his first reaction was, oh, you know, perhaps I should leave this. Why do I want to go? But then I thought, hold on, it's convenient. The Chadwell Heath training ground is just down the road. West Ham is now my local club. So it suited Jim, and off he went. But it always left a bitter taste in his mouth, the way it was handled.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Your next choice, you just mentioned Harry Kane. As we record this show, in June. This show was recorded. Harry Kane is still a Spurs player. We hope he remains a Spurs player. We know bids are coming in, certainly from Manchester City. When all this news broke, this is quite a shock to you, wasn't it?
Well, I've fallen out with lots of people on social media because I stupidly made a statement over a month ago that Harry was definitely leaving. And I know for a fact that CK66, which is the company run by his brother, Charlie, been negotiating with several clubs, and Man City are favourites to sign Harry. And we'll know by the time this broadcast goes out, but I'll be astonished if he's still wearing the lily white shirt next season.
And is that despite him still having 3 years of his contract? And
that doesn't come into. Can I say that I hardly know any transfer when a player isn't under contract to the club. Gareth Bale's in the middle of a long contract. It always happens. Money speaks, and we're talking the biggest transfer in football history, and. Harry, I'm afraid, will be going. Tottenham will hopefully spend the money wisely, but we will have to just have memories of Harry Kane, who, to me, next to Jimmy, was the greatest striker certainly in my 71 years watching Spurs.
Mm. No, absolutely right. I hope you're wrong, but I fear you will probably be right. What's incredible about your final clip, which obviously is everyone's favourite, we kind of forget this night, Harry Kane didn't play. I mean, this is the you think about iconic Spurs games. This is up there. Our talisman striker was out, injured. Many could argue he shouldn't have played in the final. And the man who scored this goal should have done. We'll never, ever tire of listening to this audio footage, no matter how many times it's picked by many Spurs supporters on this current series. Let's again, without shame, remind ourselves again of that dying moments in Amsterdam.
Matisse delicts away. Ben Davis with a tackle. Here's Son. Sissoko. Here's Dele Alli. Here's Lucas Moura. Oh, they did it! I cannot believe it! Lucas Moura with the last kick of the game. The Ajax players collapse to the ground. Tottenham Hotspur are heading to the Champions League final with a goal that we just couldn't believe. Jermaine Jenas is speechless. Absolutely speechless. And so is everyone inside this stadium.
I can't believe it, Flick.
Referee's had a look at the watch. Don't know where he's getting the time from. Here's Sissoko.
Get in the corner.
Down he goes. The full-time whistle. It's glory, glory, Tottenham Hotspur. In the most amazing Champions League semi-final that most of us have ever seen.
Even Harry's ankle's looking all right all of a sudden.
History made in Amsterdam by Mauricio Pochettino and his players. It's the greatest night in Europe for 35 years since the days of Huddle and Ardiles, and maybe the best of all time. It's what Champions League dreams are made of. It's a night these players and supporters will never forget. Tottenham Hotspur have come to the Netherlands and reached the promised land.
Where were you watching this game? What was your memory? And where do you put this? In your 70 years of supporting Spurs, where do you put this?
Well, first of all, where I was watching it on the ceiling at home. Because like everybody else, when the second half started, I honestly thought that Tottenham were going to go out of the competition. And when Lucas scored his first two goals, suddenly, as the word that all we Spurs fans know so well, hope entered the auditorium. And we're thinking, no, can we really do it? And then that the final goal when he completed his hat-trick. How big a moment? Well, it's up there with anything that I've seen or in my 71 years watching. And as I said, I've still got the bruise on my head where I hit the ceiling and I jumped. And Lucas Moura, he's gone down in Lane legend, and why not? I just wish it could have all ended there. How happy we'd all been. Pity we went and played the final.
Yes,
but we'll always have Amsterdam, won't we?
Well, this, I mean, you think about it, it's funny you've touched the point there, because whenever we've won semi-finals, and whether you lose or win the final, you kind of, okay, you know, 81 springs to mind, Highbury replay, but, you know, you don't remember, you certainly don't remember semi-finals when you go on to the final and lose it that much, you know, 82 Liverpool, I think we played West Brom in the semi-final. Semi-finals, one point is you don't normally remember them when you go on to lose a final. But this being the premier European competition, the way we did it, we were dead and buried. Goal down first leg, 3-0 down effectively at half-time. None of us saw it coming. And if you remember just before the goal, Vertonghen had a header that hit the bar when he should have scored. And you mentioned that hope. That was the moment we all went, oh, that was it. That was the moment. That was the moment. And we all kind of sat back and went, that was it. We gave it a go. Plucky Spurs. It was just... And that kind of moment doesn't happen with Spurs. There's Manchester United, Arsenal, famous for last-minute goals. That kind of moment we're not used to as Tottenham fans, are we?
I write for a living, as you know. And... I have to say, even with my vivid imagination, I could not have made that up. I mean, yeah. If I presented that to you as a script for a film, because it's too far-fetched, Norm. And thank you, Lucas. You'll be remembered forever. And how about those shots of Mauricio on the floor, kissing the floor and then crying? I mean, the emotion. I mean, we were all out. We were walking on air for a week afterwards. We really were.
Yeah, well, let's hope those moments come back sooner or later. For now, Norman, thank you so much for joining us on this week's Top 10 Top. The Kings of White Hart Lane. Top 10 Tottenham!
This is a Playback Media production. Get all the associated links for this podcast at spursshow.net.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.